Hi, Kimberly. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much. And I see you doing some great work on the energy side, on five elements side, and creating a lot of awareness about the five elements, which is quite interesting to me as well. So we'll talk of all of that today, along with, how it makes a difference during different seasons. So, let me just first introduce you to the listeners, and I think we can take it on from there. So, Kimberly Ashton is a wellness coach. She's an energy medicine practitioner, a TCM food therapist, an author, and an educator specializing in energetic nutrition. Her specialization in food centers around power of functional foods, Chinese medicine, five elements, food energetics, emotional anatomy, cultivating chi, and balancing life energies. So Kimberly is doing a lot of retreats. She's educating yoga practitioners as well as various people from wellness industry, chefs, coaches, on this concept of five elements and how it actually matters when it comes to physical and emotional health. So welcome, Kimberly. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I think we'll start with a very basic question. Tell us about yourself and what you do.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about food and the elements, so it's a great
Yes, I
opportunity
do.
on your show.
Okay.
So I was living in China. I'm currently in Australia, in Sydney, Australia, and I'm from here. I was living though from about 2001 to 2019, which is a long time, in Asia, mainly in China. I was studying there, then I was working there, and then I had a few businesses there as well, including a health food store and a cooking teaching classroom. So when I was there, I was really I had a corporate job, and then I jumped into wellness and health and nutrition.
Wellness,
Yeah, it was a big jump, but I really, it was every part of me was saying I have to do it, so that's what I had to
Yes,
do.
I can resonate with that.
Yeah, I think many people can once you find your entry into health. A lot of people go through
Exactly.
yoga or nutrition as a starting point. And I was learning about Western nutrition and I loved it. I was in China at the time and I had a acupuncturist who was a mentor of mine. She's a third generation TCM doctor, and she was very big on food and emotions, and so that's kind of where my interests have followed along. And so I was studying Western nutrition, but realizing there was a lot more to what Western nutrition has to offer, which is fantastic, but there was an energetic side with the elements. And people who study Chinese medicine or even Ayurveda, they understand that there's more layers to food
Yeah,
than
exactly.
just the surface. So, yeah, and then I started doing health coaching. I had the store as well, teaching a lot of cooking classes, but very much based around the five elements. I also came across a lovely teacher from Holland who was big onto macrobiotics. So I went down the path of macrobiotics and realized, wow, the five elements has even more layers in the kitchen and applications. So I really enjoyed that part, and then I feel like it's come like full circle. And now I'm working more with the energy medicine as well as the food, because there's always something emotional behind why we get sick or why we have imbalances in health.
True.
So yeah, so that's the short version of my
Perfect. And I
story.
just love what you do, the way you kind of interpret, physical and mental health and foods and organ systems coming in, all of it coming together as a part of energetics. So I think, again, I'll start with the very basic. Your website is by the name Chi Food Therapy, right? So, and there's a very deep meaning to that, like food therapy using energy. So just, help our listeners understand what does actually, food energetic mean. I mean, how can they, for a normal person who just understands the modern nutrition or just knows about calories and macronutrients, micronutrients, can actually understand this concept of food energy? Where do they relate to it?
Yeah, definitely. So Qi food therapy is energy and food therapy. So when I started the this brand after I came back to Australia in 2020, I knew that it was more than food for me. So I really wanted to share more about the energetics. So it's energy and food medicine and food therapies or modalities. So for the food part, food is energy, and we're all energy. We're, as humans, we're energetic beings. Actually, we're more than just the physical body. We have our meridians. We have channels of energy. We have our organs. They're all alive and have energy in them and different qualities of energy. So the types of food that we eat, but also the quality of food that we eat affects us on a physical, emotional, energetic layer. And food, if people have trouble with the word energy, because it's not something we learned in school, we can think of, you know, food grows, you know, vegetables are an easy category, even, you know, animals, they're all in nature. Traditionally, in the grass, they're surrounded by the elements. There's the, you know, air or water or sun, the soil that they grow in. So there is an energetic quality how food is grown. And when we eat certain foods, we get that energy too. That's the simplest way to explain it. And food can bring us up. It can make us happy. It can make us really heavy and sad as well.
Yes. Most people actually relate to happiness is, for most people, is food.
Yeah, and different flavors. We can talk about that as well. So our organs use energy to process the energy of food. So it's all energy at the end of the day, and that's what I really wanted to try and showcase and share with more people. So our organs absorb food, process, digest, and assimilate food, but also life that's in the food, and our emotions. So what happens, you know, today, if you had a good day at work, that's also food. "Quote unquote food that you have to process in your body. So what we're eating really affects how we feel, and that's what I wanted to bring together in Qi food therapy. I've always been big on education, so it's very much an educational brand or platform to share information with people so that they can learn, but also apply it in their own health.
Definitely, that's a great job that you're doing. So okay, Kimberly, so today we'll be talking about importance of changing diets and seasons, which I think is a common concept that's shared among almost all Eastern ancient modalities. It's not a lot of Western understanding. So before we delve deeper into these seasons and organs and foods and all of that, how can listeners understand the, like, you know, why changing diets in different seasons is important at all? I mean, even if we keep the energetic side aside, but there is something about different foods coming up in different seasons. How does it actually impact a person physically, emotionally, mentally when you live according to seasonal foods?
Yeah, that's such a great question, and not something we tend to think of traditionally in Western nutrition. But in every traditional culture, really, they understood, or they do understand, that there is a cycle or cycles. Even if you live in the equator and it's not huge, you know, differences in winter or summer, there still is a change throughout the months and the months of the year. In Chinese medicine or TCM, the elements are well understood. And even if you don't know much about five elements, which is fine, you'll feel there's a different flow, or your mood changes in winter or summer or other seasons. And some people love certain seasons. There's a reason, because their personality and constitution is more inclined for autumn or winter, or some people love spring or summer. So so this cycle can be applied to everything. And when we live in harmony with the outside world and the seasons, our internal body or our landscape or our organs will flow as well. So if we think of it more as flow, it's probably easier to understand. And when we eat out of season, which is a good way to explain or answer your question as well, when we're eating out of season, then our body has to either compensate or step up, or there's a burden or a struggle to digest certain foods. It's also probably not grown locally. So if you're importing foods from somewhere far away on the other side of the country, or these days we have a lot of imported food from other countries and across the world, the body doesn't recognize what, you know, this food from, you know, I'm in Australia, if we're eating food from Europe all the time, it's not going to help benefit my health, because it's not from my natural surroundings. It's not giving me the information that my cells need and my body needs and my organ needs, because it's coming from another environment, another climate, another country. So we used to all eat very locally and seasonally. But that has changed, obviously, with modern culture. And
I seriously believe, for the newer generations who have actually seen these food stores where a host of different foods are available from all across the world and who do not actually are connected with these ancient sciences, accepting this fact that there is a limited set of foods that is sufficient for you for a specific season is a difficult concept. Do you think so?
Yeah, absolutely, because our taste buds have changed too. So we start to get a taste for, I don't know, French cheese or Italian pasta or whatever it is, and we want more of that. So, and I understand that, and it's not that I don't ever eat imported foods, but you know, if you can keep it local and fresh, like even just your vegetables, to start with, like the basics, that would be good. And if you have some imported things, it's okay. We're living in different times, so we also have to adapt. But no, it's a good, it's a valid point. And you know, things like junk food—they're made from things from all over the world, made in the cheapest possible factory that they could be made in.
True.
So if we can avoid those foods that aren't really food, that would already be one step into a healthier diet. And then I wanted just to share two other things on that, because where in Chinese medicine, we talk about the nature of the food, so the thermal nature. So when we're eating out of season, maybe it's too, this might be a bit too advanced, but hot or cold, like there's different qualities of certain foods, and we want to have the body in balance in that season. So in winter, we tend to eat more warming foods, building foods, and summer much lighter. We do this in Western culture too. We eat more salads, or we eat more roast dinners or stews. So we already have this understanding, but in Chinese medicine, we can go a little bit deeper. And the last thing is just our body system, our immune systems as well. When we're eating out of the natural cycle or the natural seasons, then our body has to cope with that more. We put a lot of burden on, especially our immune system, when we're eating things that the body's like, why are we eating ice cream in the middle of winter in a cold country?
So do you think that possibly is one of the reasons that during seasonal transitions and going beyond, for a lot of people, a lot of health conditions happen just at that cusp of transition between the seasons, because your body is trying to deal with, so the season is changing, but your diet is not changing, and it's becoming hard for your body to cope up with the similar diet that you have.
Definitely, that's such a great point. In terms of the autumn or spring seasons, we see a lot of people with allergies or colds, definitely, because there's a change in the season outside, and two things. So if our body can't keep up with that change, then we're gonna get sick, because our it's called the Wei Qi, the defensive Qi, and the immune system pretty much isn't strong enough, so external things will come in, whether it's, you know, you go outside and it's cold and rainy and you catch a cold. Like if some people go out and they never get sick because their immune system is
strong.
And some people go outside and all the time, you know, they're very susceptible to that. So that's important. And also with the change in season, it's what you've done in that season or the previous season to build your strength. When we talk about building health in Chinese medicine, it's not just immune system, it's a big part, but your blood, your organs, like the whole system. If you don't rest in winter and you go all the way around to spring, summer again, and you haven't looked after yourself, you haven't rested, then you're going to be depleted and tired and exhausted.
So it's like building one season, building on top of the other. It's like that.
It's like building blocks. And it goes round and round in this five element cycle. Or
so every year, you have an opportunity to improve yourself if you start to build the right foundation right now.
Yeah. And if you skipped one winter, some people don't like winter. Yeah. So they go to an island and go and sit on the beach. That's okay. Yeah. But then the next winter, you might have missed out on an opportunity to build your health. And that will also possibly mean you're a little bit weaker. I say that in a nice way. It's not like you're weak, but the body accumulates information and strength and chi or energy in each season. You can, of course, use, you know, things like acupuncture and food and herbs to help balance that. And that's where the practices come from.
Great. So,
Yeah.
Kimberly, when we talk of seasonal diets, there is a whole science behind it. So, it's not just randomly that this concept has come up, like you eat this in this season. There's this whole idea of five elements working at the back of it, which most people don't know. I mean, they just know seasonal diets. This is a set of foods you should be consuming. This is not, but they don't understand what's the science that's coming along with it. So, for again, a normal person who just understands that the foods should change during seasons, how can they kind of resonate with this concept of how seasons are bringing about changes in your organ systems, or possibly going a little deeper in those elements, bringing in changes in your physical mental health, which is ultimately boiling down to changes in your organs. And that is because you need to bring about changes in your food. So how can a person in real life relate to these five elements during seasons?
It is a huge topic. The five elements is
Yes, I
a
understand that.
philosophy in itself. So if anybody is curious, I mean, it's an open invitation. I think we both are love this topic. So I'm always telling people, especially even in, like, I'm in Australia, it's a very, Western mentality. We're open to different practices and nutrition and ideas of health and wellness for sure, but it is new to most people that I meet. So I would start with the basics and just, be open and curious. Oh, there's something called the five elements. It makes sense. There's, elements in nature, and it doesn't have to be the five elements from Chinese medicine. Every, in Ayurveda, there's four, and in other systems, there's, the three doshas, four elements. We're on in Chinese medicine, there's only one with
Exactly,
five.
it's the same concept. It's language is different, but the concept is the same.
That's right. So if you start to see, oh, it makes sense, it's actually quite logical. And once people understand it, they go, or start even to look into it. It makes sense. It's not actually that hard. It's just many layers to it. So as you said, there's these elements. In Chinese medicine, we have five. So we have water, wood, fire, earth, and metal. Metal is the one that other systems don't have. They use air and ether and other things, but it doesn't matter the name. It's just us living in relationship with the outside world, understanding that there's different cycles and different elements. So in the five element system, though, that underneath the five elements, there is an organ pair. So in each season, we should look after certain organs, which also makes sense. And you're seeing this a lot happening in Western nutrition and Western health. More and more doctors are actually looking to Ayurveda and Chinese medicine for insights. And I
I think
even see
even
them talk about it now.
the modern th there's a different shift in the modern science also happening, where I think the stream of functional medicine is taking all these concepts from traditional Chinese medicine but converted into a modern concepts of modern medicine, and then articulating this concept, of course, in the form of medicine, but the underlying ground principles are coming in from TCM.
Yes, I absolutely. And they're taking little parts of it to share with people.
Like the
And I think it's
pathway
great.
system is nothing but the organ system channels and the meridian channels, right?
It's like Western doctors, and I'm not a doctor, but Western science is catching up. They're like, oh,
Yes,
the
for sure.
liver is related with the gallbladder, and there's a line of energy. And so
I
it's
tell you
like,
what,
yes.
I was working with a functional medicine practitioner during COVID times, and that's where I got this understanding that the concepts that this person builds on, I mean, of course, the approach to how you would be bring about healing is more based on supplementation and correcting the diet and all, which I was working, of course, on. But when it was about concepts, this person was talking the same language which TCM talks about. So if he's talking about liver, he's getting back into understanding what is the pathway that's making you go through this, this liver functionality, and we are going to, using these supplements and these food principles, we are going to clean up this pathway, which was as similar as what I had studied, in the basics of TCM. So it made quite a lot of sense that science is catching up, for sure.
And there's just so much. I mean, in the past, it was almost like they didn't appreciate it because it was too simple or it wasn't scientific. But I think we overcomplicate it sometimes. And with things like TCM and the elements, it's actually going back to the basics and then realizing the depth of the information. And then how fascinating it is that they even knew that there was all these meridians in the body. And people can start to feel it. You can start to feel when you have acupuncture or when you eat some different food or when you add some herbs, you'll feel the difference. And that's the most important thing. Whatever disease label we call it, if you have a problem, you'll feel the difference, and you'll feel that whatever it is. It's usually a blockage or an excess or deficiency. I know you want to talk a bit about that.
That
later
is my
as
next
well.
Question.
Oh, that's the next one.
That's
okay.
My next. Yeah.
Yeah. But basically, we're all living out of balance. In
so
the past,
I think
we come back to balance as much as possible.
Yeah. So I think just to give a direction to my question, I think it's better to relate it to excesses and deficiencies that you just mentioned. So what I wanted to understand from the listener perspective is that, say, at the back of it, you and I understand that it's about five elements, maybe fire or water element is high or it's deficient, or and that's where it's manifesting into something which is ultimately showing up as a disease. But for a normal person, somebody who you know, who lives from one season to other and realizes that every season he goes through, say, some congestive issues like, say, sinus or some cold and flu, and this person knows that in you know, in the season change, this is going to happen to me, and this person starts to accept this fact. I mean, I'm taking these real life examples because I've gone through such clients who have accepted this fact that whatever, maybe this is going to happen to me in during transition. So they kind of start living their life in that acceptance. But it's not like that. I mean, you really have to understand that it's not medication. It's just that understanding that you need to kind of break that cycle of, you know, what's not working for you and live, align yourself more to these elements. So for such people, you know, how would you explain this concept in terms of excesses and deficiencies, which ultimately, of course, boils down to elements, but say, for example, somebody has high mucus conditions during transition times, or somebody goes through this low feelings or transition feelings where the moods are tend to go up and down. From that perspective, how the five elements are playing around in the body, which is giving them those symptoms?
Yeah, definitely. So at a really oversimplified explanation, an excess is, as the word suggests, too much. So it could be too much of a certain food. It could be too much of a certain quality of food. Very simply, you could have too much sugar, or you could have too much chili or too much salt, or you know, things like that.
So what is the definition of too much? Is it person to person, or
definitely, you know, I mean, person to person. So if it starts to affect your physical organ, that would be one. So if you have, you know, sugar crashes, if you have in Western nutrition, we talk about insulin resistance and things like that. But I'm just simplifying it. So if you have too much sugar and you start craving sugar, relying on the sugar, or addicted to the cookies and the chocolates and the candies and things like that, that's too much. It could be too much spice and chili food. So you start to feel very warm, or you start to have skin breakouts or trouble sleeping. There's a lot of what we would say heat and fire going up in five elements. We also have directions. I'm not going to mention, like, overcomplicate it here, but you'll feel certain things. If you feel really spicy and hot, like, you start sweating up in the upper part of your body. If you feel very heavy and slow and lethargic, you feel very much in the lower half of the body. So if you have too much of something, and when you start to feel it, so if it's affecting your sleep or your mood or the actual organ, or you see a problem in the organ, some pain or discomfort, an acupuncturist would look for these signs and patterns if they were to see you and diagnose you. A deficiency would be something like, you know, you could have a very weak immune system. If you are very tired all the time, with low energy and mood, slightly different in Chinese medicine, we would probably look at your blood, the quality and the state of your blood, as well as the flow of the blood. So then that would give us signs to which organ an element, but which organ is needing help. Is it the kidney? Is it the liver? Is it the spleen related with blood? So we have a lot of cross, like, we can connect the dots really well in Chinese medicine.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
People will come in, you know, I'm not an acupuncturist, but I work alongside them. So, you know, you would see an acupuncturist, they treat you for a medical condition, they do the needles and things like that, maybe some herbs, but there's lifestyle things you can do in between each session to the acupuncturist or to the TCM doctor. And that's what I focus on with the food. So what are the foods that's making you feel so, you know, hot and spicy, or heaty and restless, and you have an insomnia, or, you know, you don't breathe as well? Or what are the foods that are making you, what are you eating actually that's making you chronically sick, or your immune system's not strong, or you're feeling lethargic and tired all the time? Because the food and the emotion are very much connected. So they're good signs mm-hmm. to see when you are not feeling it balanced. And a lot of people, to be really honest, don't know what balance is. If I say, oh, we're just eating in yeah. to feel harmony, they're like, I don't know what that means.
What's that?
I haven't felt that before. I'm always up or down yeah. or, you know, yeah. the Western nutrition world is very confusing because there is so much information, but exactly. it doesn't tell you to just sit and feel into your body. Your body, you know best. I can't tell you what to eat. I can't tell anyone else. Yeah. I can just make suggestions. But I always tell people, how do you feel when you eat, you know, this, whatever it is, rice or bread or apples or whatever? Mm-hmm. How do you yeah. feel? Does it feel good? I don't know how you feel. You only know how you feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the beauty of Eastern understanding of foods or life. Like Western medicine, of course, has done a lot of, you know, I mean, it's phenomenal. But the only thing that it doesn't focus on is how much is too much, like the concept of yeah. balance. I mean, if it is about supplements, yeah. of course, calcium is good for us, magnesium is good for us, protein is good for us, but how much? And how
yeah,
does
exactly.
it make you feel? That's the missing link there, I believe.
Definitely, I totally agree. And another point to that is in the Eastern sciences and the Eastern wisdoms, we see the mm-hmm. body as a whole. So we never isolate calcium. We know calcium and all the minerals are good.
Yeah,
but
it's them yeah.
all together. And we can
it's all synergy of different things coming together.
Yeah,
that,
exactly.
That's
yeah.
around in you. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't Great. Separate and isolate things.
Great. So Kimberly, my next question is like, you know, why focusing on eating for energy versus mm-hmm. calories can yeah. make a huge difference to one's physical and emotional health? And I think that's a very practical question because most people who are seeking diet changes just understand this concept of calories. I mean, they are not aware of concepts beyond that. And they cannot even, as you said, relate to this concept that there's a difference between living and feeling lively. So yeah. Yeah. how can eating for energy bring about that difference?
Yeah, so it's definitely more about the feeling. And mm-hmm. the observation. So see, you know, if you change your diet or you add some foods in or take some foods out, see how you feel rather than counting things. I mean, some people love the accuracy or a really good recipe mm-hmm. or the detail and they want to track their food. That's fine. You can do that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But if we are shifting the mentality from how many calories am I eating per day and counting them all, it takes the joy mm-hmm. out of eating.
Spending
personally.
Time just counting calories.
yeah.
yeah.
But I fully appreciate some people need the structure. So you do what you do you and do what helps you to start with. But if you yeah. are interested in, you know, TCM and the five elements and this side of food and nutrition, it is very much about the seasons and the energies of it and how you're feeling, how it makes you feel mm-hmm. is probably a better way to say it mm-hmm. Than counting. We've never count calories. It's more about feeling. You eat until you're full. And so for some people, mm-hmm. it might be a really big plate. And for some people, it's less. It could differ as well on your age and what you're going through in your life. Mm-hmm. When I'm teaching or working, you know, talking a lot and thinking a lot, I eat a lot more because my calorie intake is to fuel my body.
Yeah.
If I'm not, maybe, you know, if I'm on holiday or in a quiet period, which is very rare for me, I won't mm-hmm. eat so much. But I mm-hmm. eat a lot and people are always saying, where do you put all the food? I'm like, I'm consuming it. I'm using it. So I need this food because it's for me, it's brain food. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We talk a lot about in Chinese medicine, the spleen and the thinking mind.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly feeding my spleen physically, emotionally, and energetically because if I'm busy talking and writing or working, we're burning mm-hmm. through a lot of food or fuel or calories in that way. Yeah, yeah. But mm-hmm. I don't suggest personally counting calories. Or if you're really love counting calories because that's what you're used to, start getting into the feeling sense as well. Start to, you know, when yeah. you eat something, how do I feel afterwards? If I had this for breakfast today, oh, maybe I'm hungry, you know, an hour later. No amount of calories will actually help you feel into that or think why. Because if you eat one thing for breakfast today and a different thing tomorrow, they could be the same calories in a number.
Yeah.
But if you're eating pastries
energetically
and
different.
Brown rice porridge or oatmeal, yeah. it's going to make you feel very different.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Kimberly, moving on to the seasons, now that, I mean, like I'll talk from the perspective of where I am right now. So in Canada, like we are moving more towards the fall season right now. So if we have to look at that cycle from the five element perspective, and if we consider that this transition, we are just on the cusp of this transition from towards fall season from summer. So, you know, how can a person actually relate to the energy outside in the environment and the resonance of that energy inside our body? Like what kind of feelings or what kind of changes they can they feel in their body with those shifts in the nature? And how should their diet look, diet or maybe lifestyle look like to be able to be aligned with this transition?
Yeah, no, that's great. And remembering, yeah, wherever you are in the world, follow that season. So, you know, if you're traveling, then follow the local season. So for, yeah, you guys up in the northern hemisphere coming into autumn and what we call the metal element, you don't need to worry too much about that, the term, if you're not so familiar with that. But recognizing that there are seasonal changes outside in the temperature, in the color of the leaves, in, you know, the dryness in the air, that affects us. Directly, and you can have certain foods or herbs to help you mitigate the effects of that. It's not that we want to ignore
Dryness is I
it.
think that that's an important point that you've raised because I think this part of the world actually I mean since I have also moved in recently, I realized that dryness is something which is severe in this part of the world. It's like it's killing. I mean, so you know, so how what is it to do with the kind of weather that we experience in you know in Canada and once you like how you should be transitioning smoothly into the next season while dealing with all these conditions that come up to at your level.
So what I would suggest broadly, and then I'll come back to the autumn and dryness, but broadly, if you follow the five element cycle, and again, you can just start with the basics of what are the elements, what are the organs, what are the seasons, and then the next layer I would suggest is what we call them the six evils. They're not evil, but the six climate or external factors that are affecting you. And in autumn, it's dryness. In winter, it's cold. In summer, it's heat or overheating. Then you start to connect the dots and go, oh, okay, yes. So my body needs to be balanced from the dryness of the weather outside. So I will, you know, I would suggest eating more hydrating foods. Now, that makes no sense to somebody who doesn't know what it means, but things with lots of water content. So I know people eat a lot of toast. I eat toast sometimes too, but we want to have less dry foods. And if you look at every traditional culture, everybody's grandma or great grandma around the world, they all had soup of some sort, soup in all seasons, but particularly in autumn, winter, they knew how to make really nourishing soups. They ate a lot of hydrating vegetables. So I'm going to talk about things like parsnips, radishes, cabbages. They have natural content of water in them as well, and fruits as well. So we have things like persimmons. I don't know what you call them over there. I think it's the same.
No, I think
There's
we have a
we have
similar
those too,
feeling.
yeah.
Yeah,
They
but
have a
I
lot
see
of
you.
water in them. In China, we use in Asia actually, we use a lot of lotus root as well in this season. There are a lot of different vegetables or foods that are associated with the organs. So something like lotus root, if anyone's seen a lotus root, it's connected with all the other bulbs of the lotus root, and then it has little holes in it. And so these little holes represent the lungs and our respiratory system. So the respiratory system in Chinese medicine is associated with the lungs and the large intestine, which is the metal element. So each element has organs that are ideally looked after in that season. So for you guys, metal is about, and autumn is about lungs and large intestine. And the lungs and large intestine, both of those organs don't like dryness. Hence, the dry weather has to be balanced. And food is a great way to do it. You can have, you know, seasonal fruits for you guys would be like apples and pears. At the end of summer, coming into autumn. The end of summer is also the harvest season, so there's the most amount of fruits, vegetables, and foods available. So really, seeing what's local and seasonal, I always suggest going to like a farmer's market or somewhere where you can have like fresh foods.
Yeah, of course that makes sense, and that's how you get to know like what's in the season.
And then lastly, with the autumn is the flavor. So there's five flavors. Water is about, or winter is about salt, sour flavor in spring, spice and bitter foods in summer, sweet foods in what we call late summer or earth element. And the metal element is all about this pungency flavor. So things like onions, horseradish, different types of radish, they have a bit of a stimulating energy to them, so they make things move in your large intestine, which is what you want, and the lungs. So we don't want to be accumulating mucus or any overly or anything that's left over from summer. So if you had a really wild summer of eating lots of food and partying and going crazy, now's a good time in autumn to bring your energy back down. And keep it strong with yeah, some hydrating foods and movement in your food, in the flavor. So yeah, pungent flavors of that nature are good to stimulate and keep things moving in your lymphatic system and your organs.
So moving on to the next season, like once the fall, moves on towards winters, how would the transition kind of move from season to season to complete one cycle?
Yeah, so the metal is the fall is the completion. The metal element is all about the completion of one cycle, this year's cycle. So as we move into winter, as you guys move into winter, it will be the focus will shift. It'll get colder. It won't be as dry, and depending where you are, of course. But it just gets really cold. And what happens in that season is what we want to look after the kidneys and the bladder. That's the other organ pair. The bladder is a bit hard to for people to get their head around and look after, unless you've had some sort of illness or a UTI, a urinary tract infection, then you know. But focusing on the kidneys, so I would suggest things to nourish the kidneys. We're always looking to nourish that whatever organ it is in that season. So for winter, it would be the salty flavor. Not to say you have too much salt, just having good quality salty foods helps with your blood and your kidney function. I would recommend dark colored foods as well. So things like black sesame, black beans, kidney beans. If you're a meat eater, then the warming, we call them warming meats. Different meat has different qualities energetically as well. So things like lamb or beef, if you're a meat eater. If you're not a meat eater, then definitely look to the beans that I just mentioned, even black lentils, dark colored foods, black,
Dark
blues,
colored
dark
foods,
reds, purples, beetroot. I don't know how popular burdock is in Canada,
It is,
but
it is, it
oh,
is.
good, yeah. But if you go into any
I
Asian
mean, but
store,
I
they
can tell
have
you
it.
one thing, like for a lot of these vegetables, like we're talking of even like not the most common ones or heard ones. I think I'm the only one going and buying all of these things, and sometimes when I'm getting the billing done, this person asks me, "Can you tell me what this is?" So it's quite funny, like these people are working there for years. I mean, because nobody buys it, they're not even aware what's the name of that specific vegetable.
Yeah. And if you can't get it fresh, you can get it dried. In Western nutrition and in herbal stores or health food stores, we have a lot of burdock tea. So that it's good. The energy, I don't want to talk like too much or too off track for people if they're not familiar, but in winter it's about a hibernation and a downward energy. We want to come ground ourselves. We want to, it's cold outside, so we stay indoors more. We want things that bring that quality energy of energy
That
in.
cozy feeling, that really comfortable feeling,
So root vegetables is a wonderful way. And in every traditional culture, they understood that in different seasons you eat different vegetables. And in colder climates in winter, there's definitely a lot more root vegetables. We haven't touched on cooking, but I would also cook differently in different seasons. So in winter, definitely more slow cooking, more using the oven. Like you want to bring warmth into your food and your body. Through that, you're not going to be eating. Some people do, salads the whole way through winter, but we don't suggest that in Chinese medicine, especially in Canada, as it's so cold. Like
Yeah,
really
it's hard to go.
having your warm stews, your warm food, slow cooking, and then lastly, dark things like mushrooms. So all of the mushroom categories are really good. The darker, the better, as well.
Okay. So, Kimberly, again, a relative question. It's a very known fact in both traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda as well that the transition time is the time to detox. So, back in India, if I see, there are certain festivals coming up specifically during these seasons, which people understand as festivals, but after learning a lot about TCM and Ayurveda, I realized that there's a cleansing significance to those festivals. Like the kind of foods that are recommended during that time of frame is different from regular foods that we consume, and it has a cleansing quality to it. So, from the detox perspective or cleanse perspective, what do you recommend? Like, it's like twice a year when the major transitions happen, basically from winters to summers and summers to winters. And from the TCM perspective, how should your diet and lifestyle look like if for somebody who's really wanting to detox during those times?
Definitely those are the good times because you're coming out of a cold winter wherever you are, or even if it's not cold, if you live in the tropical place, or if you're coming out of summer going into autumn. So they're a perfect opportunity to detox, or I don't really like the word detox. Detoxification's all right, but because we've made it very trendy and people do it all year round and they want to do it every day or every month. And so then we would call that depleting. If you're doing it too much, then you're depleting your body. Whereas in Chinese
I have
medicine,
another question before,
we want to build up.
sorry. Yeah. So before we move further, I just want to add on another question so that when you answer, you keep that thing also, as consider that aspect also. You talk very rightly about this concept of detoxification, which happens all year round for a lot of people. And it could be something like a 1-day detox or a 2-day detox or a 3-day detox where you're using these, majorly you're consuming a lot of juices and smoothies to kind of give that your body a cleanse. So how does that kind of a cleanse that is happening any time of the year, different from these seasonal cleanses, which is highly recommended in Ayurveda and TCM?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you are taking, I'm not against smoothies or juices at all, but I see them being a little bit overused for the wrong people in the wrong season, and depends on your constitution. So if you are You tend to get sick a lot, or you have very weak digestion, or you have low iron, or any of these sort of conditions. You're not doing your body any good by weakening it. We would say weakening, because the juices and smoothies are good for cleansing. Absolutely, you lighten your diet for a few days or a week. But what the juices and the smoothies are doing is not building your or fortifying your organs and your system. It's just what we'd would prefer in Chinese medicine. So even when we do a cleanse or a detox, it's not about stripping away things. It's about naturally letting the body remove what is excess, but keeping what's good. Whereas in the West, we tend to think of like detox as just clean, 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 clean. We want to get rid of everything. And I'm like, then you have nothing left. So that's the first difference. So yeah, the seasonal cleanses are more about getting back into balance than going to one extreme, which unfortunately I see and or I observe in the Western smoothie juice world. Some brands are doing better and they'll add in some herbs. They work with a herbalist or a naturopath or a TCM doctor so that you're building whatever it is, the large intestine or the colon in your digestive system, not just giving it ice cold things and stripping things away, because it can leave you feeling more depleted. And ideally, in spring and in autumn, in a TCM way of cleanses or detoxes, it's much lighter, it's much gentler. They tend to use vegetables rather than fruits. is a big difference, big observation. And they use functional foods for this, and they're very knowledgeable on the flavor and the action or the energy of the food. For example, in spring, we would have a lot of green things, whether it's green vegetables, certain herbs as well, and teas and tonics to clean the liver or help the liver after winter. And then in autumn, we would have vegetables, like I mentioned, the lotus root or the daikon or some barley, some Chinese barley. They all have a really gentle cleansing effect. They remove oils, fats, excesses of heat in the body, in the system, and it's a much milder cleanse than having 10 green smoothies.
Yeah, so this is something like an ongoing kind of a cleanse, which is kind of gently cleansing you as well and building you as well, not just only creating depletion.
That's right. And really, when you know what foods to have or herbs or flavors, you can do it. Like you said, it doesn't have, you don't have to wait until spring or autumn. And that's the beauty of the five elements. It's really getting you to trust your body and knowing what you feel. So if I'm feeling, you know, in the middle of winter, if I'm feeling, you know, that I'm out of balance, so I want to have a cleanse, I can do it, but I will do it through food, but not in a depleting way. So I'm not going to go to an extreme. I guess that's the fundamental principle is no extremes. We don't like to go to just fruits or just water for you know, for a long period of time. I mean, some people watching might be like, oh, but you know, in the old days in the temples or people did do fasting. Absolutely. That's a different thing. And it's for a short period of time. But they will come back with wholesome food as well. But at the end of the day with five elements is about not going to too much extremes because that shocks the body.
Okay, no, I think that very deeply resonates with even with how Ayurveda brings in this concept of cleanse on a regular basis and specifically during those transition times. So I think as you said, functional foods in Ayurveda, spices are used as like you know, one kind of functional food to bring about those shifts in the body.
And lastly, with Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, when we're talking about detox or cleansing, whether it's seasonal or whether because you're sick, it's a holistic approach. So they would do it together with other treatments. You would have massage, you would have
True,
all the
true.
wonderful physical body work, acupuncture as well, because they know you can't just do one thing and change the body, like
No,
do it for
even
all
in
of them.
Ayurveda, I think like a lot of people have actually started combining yoga and Ayurveda together. I mean, you know, it's becoming a part of as a way of life rather than only practicing yoga or only practicing Ayurveda.
And which is what it was designed for
Yeah,
in the past.
exactly.
That's traditionally
True.
what it is. If we move with, if we can move the body with physical movement, exercise, but also breathing and food, then we don't have blockage, we don't have excesses, we don't have deficiencies. Like again, it's all about this idea of balance, or coming back into balance as often as you can.
Okay. So, Kimberly, like this is one curious question that I have for you. You know, coming from the place of yoga, it really, you know, it was quite interesting for me to know that, you know, you're teaching this concept of five elements in yoga retreats. So how are you know, what kind of association is there between those five elements in terms of designing your diet and lifestyle, which resonates with the yoga practice? Because, you know, with yoga, you are, of course, it's a spiritual practice if you're doing it the traditional way. You're already practicing a lot of cleanse kind of practices, doing all those kriyas. And then when you're practicing, say, different forms of exercising, of course, you're indirectly working on your meridian channels also. Of course, in yoga, we don't use that term as meridian, we use the term as nadis. But it's more or less again, the terminology is different, but the concept is the same. So this concept sounded really interesting to me, where now it's kind of a level of filtration where possibly, you know, how in different seasons, you know, you bring in certain kinds of foods that strengthen your organ systems and then you practice yoga. Is it that kind of a concept that you talk about in your yoga retreats? How do you bring the two things together?
Yeah, that's a good question too. So I'm just passionate about the five elements and sharing it with as many people as possible. And a yoga audience is a very captive audience. They come, it's more like a wellness retreat and we do some yoga. I teach some other movement like some Qigong exercises, some simple ones. For most people it's new. So I go about the theme. So my theme of the retreats that I host is one is called stress relief and one is called living with ease. So it fits in quite well with the five elements from the perspective of I introduce the elements to people and I do it through the lens of what is your predominant element. So understanding yourself better really is what I apply. I don't go into the food so much because it's too big a topic and overwhelm people. But if people can understand why they're more of a wood person, and they will like different types of yoga, even. And a metal person or a water person will like different types of movement or yoga as well. When we start to understand ourselves, I do a lot of the emotional side because of the theme of that of those two retreats that I host. So why people get angry and hold the emotions in their liver, and why some people go inwards and are more introverted. So by understanding through the lens of the five elements themselves better. They can understand why they make the choices that they make in their life, why they talk the way or behave the way that they do. So I, in the retreat, I actually, right now, I don't talk about food, hardly. Maybe I mention the flavor, but it's mainly the level of the, what are the elements, how
understanding
are they,
your own energetics, basically.
Yeah, just learning about yourself more. And then I do have a slide where I actually, in the five elements, I put, just as examples, different types of yoga. So yin yoga being more metal, and ashtanga or power yoga being more like wood, fire, restorative yoga being very
more young kind of.
So I use the, I introduce the energies of the five elements to people.
Specific practices, okay.
Yeah, and just but mainly to understand themselves better. I think that's what we need.
Okay.
If we just understand ourselves better, and that we're all different, and we feel different.
Exactly.
Food and emotions, then you can build on the food and the emotions.
True. Okay. Now, since we're talking emotions, I like, you know, this is again coming from my practical experience working with different clients. In most of the people, one common thing that came up as a part of their personality, that most of the people have this morning time anxiety, specifically morning time anxiety, for no reason. Like, they wake up, if they don't have a plan in place or a schedule in place, the morning hours until it's like really sunny, maybe around 11 or 12 is where they start to settle down or ground into the day. But before that, it's too much of a rush, too much of overthinking, too much of, you know, mind not getting settled, experiencing that level of anxiety. So do you think it's that morning energy is somewhere related to the concept of five elements? And are there any specific kind of foods or food practices that can bring about that settlement for a person during those hours?
Yeah, definitely. So there's something, and your listeners and viewers can look up, is the 24-hour meridian clock or organ clock from Chinese medicine. It's a colorful wheel. And the principle is that every 2 hours in Chinese medicine, there are certain organ times, which make, again, logical sense. So in the morning time is the earth element, which is the stomach and the spleen time. So breakfast time. So I know that intermittent fasters don't like to hear this, but in Chinese medicine, especially for long-term health, you can do fasting, it's fine, short-term or detoxes or whatever you would like. But over the very long term, like, you know, a few years, if you are not having breakfast and looking after the stomach and spleen, which is exactly what you mentioned, the emotions related to that are worry, anxiety, overwhelm. It's like a wiry type of energy.
Yeah.
And you just, it's and people may or may not want to eat if they're that anxious or worried, but actually having some food in the belly will calm and ground them. So the earth element is about this grounding energy. So you wake up and, you know, people like me, I'm a very strong wood element person. So I wake up and I want to do stuff. I'm very busy. But I also need to take a few breaths, have a proper breakfast and calm down. Because otherwise, if you just wake up and go with that anxiety energy, then you'll crash somewhere. Usually people crash in the afternoon and then they want some sugar because they have no energy. But so I would suggest, if you are feeling very anxious and overwhelmed and jittery in the morning, having something for breakfast is a good idea. Maybe not first thing is to have coffee. And people who drink coffee don't like to hear this either. But a lot of TCM doctors I'm seeing, even, you know, on social media and Instagram, they are even talking about this now. Don't have coffee straight away. Have coffee 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, if you really want it then. But have something in the belly, to in your stomach, to bring your blood sugar into a stable place, which is very important for the stomach, spleen, and also the pancreas, so that you have this nice stability throughout the day. So a lot of people don't eat breakfast, or they eat very sugary, crappy foods for breakfast, or that doesn't ground you and give you the sustenance and the energy that is what the earth element needs, which is the stomach and the spleen. So I'll give you some examples. Most traditional cultures have some sort of warm thing for breakfast. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a porridge or an oatmeal, or even if it's bread, but it's usually warm. It's not like ice cold smoothie bowls, which is very trendy.
And it's not like ready to eat kind of stuff. Like, you just pick it up and start eating. It's not like that.
Yeah, it's not McDonald's. It's not Starbucks. It's not sugar. It's just, it's real food. And so if you can have something, it doesn't have to be big, but just something small and nourishing and warming. If you can find foods that bring you that quality, that's what we need. And if in doubt, look to you know, those traditional cultures, what did they eat? You know, people eat eggs, or omelets or things like that. Great. Like, eat something that's going to give you the fuel that you need for the day.
Okay. And do you recommend smoothies? Like, I know you, you know, you have a book on smoothies, Digital Chinese.
Yeah,
so that was again very interesting for me.
So we don't, in Chinese medicine traditionally, there's no, the concept of smoothie, like putting cold things in a blender is very foreign. However, I do have a book because my TCM doctor and my mentor, Dr. Zhang, she has written a few books and her publisher asked her to write a book on smoothies because it was so trendy overseas.
But that's quite interesting concept. It sounds like medicine is the smoothies.
They are, yes. So it's funny because I deliberately, so she asked me to help co-write the book. And so I wrote the recipe. She wrote some like comments from a TCM doctor perspective. And I deliberately tried to, I did not put avocado, banana, or ice in the whole book. And so that people are like, that's not a smoothie. I'm like, no, because a smoothie is a blended substance. So we use a lot of traditional foods and simple things. Like, we made teas first. Like, you could make a green tea or a chamomile tea. Use that as a liquid to make a smoothie. No ice, because in Chinese medicine we really don't like ice. It shocks the spleen. It's cold and it shocks the spleen and it disables the digestive system. In Ayurveda, actually, there's a wonderful word I like to cross-reference them. We don't have this word for digestive fire, which is Agni. If you don't have a strong digestive fire, which is in this earth element, the spleen and stomach, you can't digest life and emotions and food. It's just your fire is out. You don't have energy or life and vitality. So much. So that's why I skipped the ice in the smoothie. So room temperature. I also have something called mountain yam or shan yao. And if you blend that up, it's really creamy. So I look to a lot of alternative things like tubers and root vegetables that are cooked, are soft, to get the thickness. And a lot of herbs, goji berry and fruits and things like goji berries, warming things like cinnamon, cooling things like mint. So just using some basic principles. The ingredients aren't too foreign. But it was a fun project and concept, because you can have the idea of a drink, a warm drink, blended. Sorry, it doesn't even have to be warm, but just not iced. So I'm not against smoothies. I think they're a good concept, or even like smoothies or protein shakes or drinks, as long as it's as a supplementary thing and you're still eating well. So, and for the right person in the right season. So I definitely wouldn't recommend them in winter, especially in Canada, with ice. But in summer, on a hot day, why not? Why not have a smoothie? You know, I personally would have it later in the day, like 10 or 11 or afternoon. I don't have them first thing in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. And I think my last question to you is going to be, how do your meals look like?
That's a good question too. Lots of good questions.
Thank you.
So for me, breakfast is always warm. It can be sweet or savory. It doesn't I go with what I feel, and a lot of people like to eat one thing for breakfast, and some people will eat the same thing all year round every day, and that's fine, but I need a bit of variety. I don't like eating the same thing. I get bored, so usually warm. So this morning I had oatmeal with cinnamon and walnuts and pumpkin seeds. I really like savory breakfasts, like a rice or millet porridge, and millet is something that I really wish more people would eat in India and in China. It's a very traditional.
It's one of the main foods. It's becoming a main food now.
It's coming back in fashion.
And it's like the millet varieties are like endless. I mean, so how
in India they are. In China, just the yellow one.
We have a lot of variety. Rather, in Canada also, I see a lot of, not as much as we have in India, but in Indian stores in Canada, I find variety, like at least 7 to 8 different kinds of millets I do find here.
Wow. That's great. Yeah, we don't have them in Australia. Yeah.
But then I get confused. Is it like I bring in all that variety, or I just stick to 2 or 3 or 4, which kind of,
I like the variety. So if you can have different colored millet, which there is, there's white, yellow, different shades of brown. From India. In China, it's just yellow. They have different types of the yellow millet, but it's still yellow. because it just never got as popular with the others. But because in India, you use them in different ways. You make puffs, yeah. You make flour, you make...
I ferment the batter and then I make...
Yes.
Yeah. And it's very tasty. I mean, those complex flavors are so satiating.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're missing, the complex flavors. I know we didn't talk so much about flavor, yeah. But we tend to, in Western... you know, food, cafes, restaurants, or even cooking, we have a lot of sugar, yeah. And salt. We're just eating those two. That's it. We don't have the fermented flavor. We don't have the sour flavor, the pungent flavor. We're missing a lot of flavors and we don't feel satiated. So therefore we eat snacks and junk food.
Exactly.
But to get back to your question, I like variety. So as long as it's mm-hmm. you're mixing it up, so you're not eating the same thing, the body likes a bit of variety, mm-hmm. is good. And then millet porridges are good. You can make them sweet or savory. If you're not sure what millet is, you can look it up, but cook it as like a rice, and you can make it dry and mm-hmm. fluffy, or like oatmeal and thick and creamy. It's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
I also really like pancakes of any kind, whether it's buckwheat pancakes or chickpea flour, yeah. pancakes. I love mm-hmm. pancakes and wrapping things a lot. And for me, lunch and dinner, if it's like a day of what I eat, for me, it's about the same. Like I don't separate what lunch foods and dinner foods are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big sandwich person. I mean, I like sandwiches, but I just don't have much mm-hmm. to put in a sandwich. I don't eat a whole lot of meat. So so I tend to have a lot of like warm salads if it's summer, like roasted vegetables and some salad leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I do really like Asian food as well as Western food, but so I really like curries or noodles or rice and beans and tofu. Like I mm-hmm. gravitate more to the Asian foods. In summer, I will have more salads though.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not cold from the fridge either. So I tend to take food out if it's a salad, mm-hmm. like the vegetables,
yeah.
Leave it out for a while, and then I'll make my salad. I don't eat it. I don't eat anything straight from the fridge. I used to, and I had a lot of digestive mm-hmm. problems, and then I changed okay. that, and it changed yeah. everything.
Great. So, and just on the ending note, what would you want to recommend? Some common foods from anybody's pantry, which they should be consuming yeah. every single day, which act yep. as say functional foods or medicinal foods.
I think you can do a lot in the grain section and the tea section. Mm-hmm. So if your pantry. So I know a lot of people, especially in the West, have this myth against grains and carbohydrates, but we really need to be quite specific about what that means, because we can't mm-hmm. say all carbs are bad or all mm-hmm. grains are bad, because there's some really good ones. Black rice is, mm-hmm. if you have never tried, actually millet is really good. I would suggest to people try millet and some black rice, like mm-hmm. go find those foods because they have functional properties. The millet's really good for the spleen. It's like the spleen's best friend. Therefore, it uh-huh. strengthens your digestion, and all of things like IBS, food allergies, they're all in that earth element. And then black mm-hmm. rice is really good for blood, and a lot of people are what we call blood deficient or energy or chi mm-hmm. deficient. They get very tired very easily. They don't think really clearly. For women, it affects our menstrual cycle as well if we don't have enough blood. So things mm-hmm. that are dark colored is a thing that I see people are missing. So black sesame and uh-huh. black rice. And then for teas, because again, it's easy. You can go to a supermarket and get them, or you can go to an organic store and get better quality teas. But mm-hmm. Start to learn about different teas. If it's hot, have some cooling tea like peppermint tea. In winter, have mm-hmm. some burdock tea, or I'm a big fan of red raspberry leaf. It's not so much, it is in Chinese medicine too.
Mm-hmm.
But start to, have seasonal teas. If you don't cook, start with tea. because yeah. you can do a lot physically and energetically in the organs and the body by having different herbs teas. And different foods. Yeah, and teas. Yeah.
Great session, Kimberly. I'm still trying to absorb whatever you've told. It's like phenomenal information you have. So on the ending note, is there anything else that you would want to add on before we end the session?
Just to encourage people to, just to start, looking at five elements. I often get mm-hmm. asked about books. There's not that many books compared to Western nutrition or even yeah. Ayurveda.
So why don't you talk about your website and what you do, your courses that you offer, if somebody gets interested in learning more about it.
Yeah, so I start with your predominant elements. So I have a webinar on that if you're interested in learning which is your predominant elements and learning more about the elements, as well as a five element and cycles short course. If you are interested in like plant-based nutrition, I'm not strictly vegan or vegetarian, but I go more on that side. There's a wonderful course on boosting your chi, so boosting your energy if you want to remove more, like if you want to go more plant-based. And then next year I'm launching a five element nutrition course, like a full certification course that I'm writing with some acupuncturists. So that won't be out till next year, but really go deep diving into five element nutrition, because I don't see a course like this out there. There's a lot for Ayurveda, there's a lot for paleo or keto or vegan diets, but nothing about the elements. So I think it's time to
exactly, and that's what I love about your profile. Like, you know, actually going back to the most basic thing that actually exists, and you know, creating everything from that source.
Yeah, getting back to the basics and understanding the elements. Mm. So if anybody's interested, chifoodtherapy.com. So chi is QI. foodtherapy.com, and same on like Instagram where
I'll mention that
there.
In our bio as well, so people can just go and search more about you.
That would be great. I would love to connect with people and just help share this information about the elements. I know we both love them so much, but
exactly,
but for a reason. They bring benefit. I felt the benefit, you felt the benefit. When you start to change small things in your diet, you'll see the difference and feel the difference for sure.
It's a huge transformational shift. We don't realize it, but once you get into it, you realize how everything starts to change for you.
Your food your changes, your emotion changes, your sleep changes, like it's all connected. So you definitely get a lot of benefits.
Great, Kimberly. Thank you so much for sharing such phenomenal information with us and, sparing time for this. Thank you so much. And I'd really look forward to, having more sessions with you, maybe, on different topics going forward. But thank you for this, for this session today and sharing your valuable knowledge with us.
My pleasure. It's such a pleasure to talk about these topics. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.